welcome back to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. This is the HR Happy Hour Show number 162, all about RPO. What, when, how, and we'll get into talent acquisition in general as well. It's going to be a fascinating show. We've got a great guest lined up. John Wilson from Wilson HCG is waiting in the wings to come on board to talk to us about RPO and talent acquisition technology and just everything. It's going to be an exciting show. I'm interested to talk to John and get some of his insights as well. This show is being recorded on Thursday, May 16th, 2013, and we'll post on the website tomorrow, Friday, May 17th. So if you're listening to this, it's fresh content, May 16th, 2013, a beautiful spring day here in upstate New York where I live, and hopefully a nice day where you are as well. Some quick notes and announcements. Trish McFarland, the HR ringleader, the co-host of the show, is on a plane as we speak, and we were not able this week to coordinate everybody's schedules to get myself, John, and Trish all aligned. So we're sad to miss Trish again, but she's busy. You know, she's doing the real work while I get to fool around on the podcast today. So Trish will be back next show for sure. I do want to say thanks to my friends George LaRocque and everybody at Influence HR. The event I attended earlier this week was a fantastic event. Great to see George, and he did a great job with the show, and huge props to him and the whole team there for putting on Influence HR. I enjoyed it. Great to see so many friends, great presentations, and super content. So, again, thanks to George and the team from Influence HR. And next week I have a big week. I'm going to the Silk Road user event in Fort Lauderdale, I think, or I'm flying to Fort Lauderdale. The Silk Road user event's next week. I'm looking forward to seeing some folks from Silk Road and maybe some of you as well. So, all right, enough of that. So let's get on with it. We want to get on with the show and introduce our guest is John Wilson. John is the CEO of Wilson HCG. He's the founder and CEO of Wilson HCG. John's hands-on leadership approach has been instrumental in driving growth every year since the company's inception. He's a respected authority in the industry, and he's educates business leaders on a wide range of human capital topics, including talent acquisition, diversity leadership, and employee engagement and retention. John's an expert on hiring and motivating and retaining Gen Y employees and has advised Fortune 500 companies on their emergence in the workforce. He's also served on the advisory council for Monster.com and appeared on Dr. Drew's Life Changers. That's pretty cool. And he's also been featured in Finding Keepers, The Monster Guide to Hiring and Holding the World's Best Employees, the American Business Journal, CIO Magazine, ERE.net, among others. John's a big supporter of youth sports and of Autism Speak. So, John, great. That's awesome. I love that you're on the Dr. Drew Show. I'd love to talk about that sometime as well. So, John Wilson, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. How are you?
Great, Steve. Thanks a lot for having me. And, it's a complete separate conversation. The Dr. Drew Show is quite an experience. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, John, I appreciate it as well. And I failed to mention, John's on, you can connect with John on LinkedIn, of course, John Wilson, but a very common name. I imagine, John, you're not the only John Wilson on LinkedIn. I got to believe there's more than one of you. So hopefully folks can find you. And also on Twitter, at Wilson CEO, which is really cool. Hey, John, first off, and I'll tell you my Dr. Drew story if we have time at the end as well. I have a very short Dr. Drew story. But tell us a little bit about yourself, beyond the bio maybe, and tell us more importantly maybe about Wilson HCG. What's Wilson HCG all about?
Sure. Yeah, we're a global recruitment process outsourcing firm. And I think what the differences are for us compared to the, seems like every company is using the acronym RPO. Our goal is really to go into an organization, find out what the issues are and what can be done better. Not just outsourcing everything, but really having a good understanding on how to optimize the recruitment process. And at the end of the day, finding the top talent to drive those business results.
Great. And how long has Wilson HCG been around?
We were founded in 2002, and so we celebrated 10 years last year and looking forward to the next 10.
That's awesome. You're right, John. I think it's true that the term RPO has now become fairly common, and one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show, among a couple, was to maybe get behind that term a little bit and to understand it a little better because – I mean, for me, I'm not in the recruiting game directly. For me, I feel like I don't completely understand. I mean, I get what the term means, but I don't really necessarily understand completely the business relationship and the value to organizations that can be realized from a good RPO relationship. And then secondly, of course, to talk a little bit more generally about talent acquisition today and what you're seeing as you work with your customers and your clients and partners in and around talent acquisition in general. And I guess the last thing I'll say is, late in 2012, we did a show with Jerry Crispin, who's, you know, a well-known recruiting, yep, you know, thought leader. And we asked him towards the end of the show about what's the big trends, what's happening in the next 12 to 18 to 24 months in recruiting, what's going to be a very big deal in recruiting. And he talked a little bit about technology and some of those things. And I think the second thing he said was RPO, particularly going more down market into mid-sized companies and even smaller companies, that he thought was going to be a very prevalent and maybe interesting dynamic to watch in the next year to 2 years. So that's another reason why I thought a good follow-up on an RPO conversation was worthwhile for the show. So, well, great, John. Thanks for that. Hey, first off, I wanted to try to hit you up since you've got that perspective, you know, as CEO of an RPO company working with lots of clients, all kinds of clients, different sizes, different industries. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about, you know, what we hear the so-called maybe war for talent, quote-unquote, is it, or the skills gap. Are companies that you work with and you try to help, are they really having widespread or consistent problems today in finding the talent that they need from your perspective?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I've heard for the last 8 years, maybe minus 2 years in the huge economic downturn, this term war for talent. And I think that right now it's never been as prevalent, or actually what I would consider a true war on talent, until right now. We have a client that are sitting in Silicon Valley looking for engineers, and it is the most creative recruitment process you could imagine, trying to get these people on board and to really see the buy-in of the organization. You know, on the other side of the table, we have a client in Tampa here where we do on the much lower end of the spectrum. They're hiring 100 to 150 people a month in either call center or inside sales roles. And it's a challenge to get that many bodies that are talented and can do the job functionally in the door. And so you have to be very creative in the recruitment process. The days of, you know, posting jobs on a job board and looking in the ATS are so far in the past that the creativity is really key.
Yeah, John, that's a great point, and I'm glad you used that word creativity. It was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because obviously, you know, your organization is assisting your customers and clients to meet these talent acquisition challenges, certainly, and I'd imagine some of your clients, or just companies in general, some are more comfortable, right, with these newer or creative approaches to talent acquisition than others might be, I'd imagine. But I'd love for you to comment about whether it's the industry, the companies that are having success, whether it's a Silicon Valley company, you know, fighting for engineering talent, or as you said, you know, a company looking for, say, call center or retail talent. What are some of the creative things, or the new and innovative things that companies that are having success, what are they doing to sort of help them stand out?
Well, I think it's just one major shift is that recruitment used to be very reactive, and it needs to be proactive. So the employment brand is key. Many organizations will go in to talk to, whether it's Fortune 500 or a mid-sized enterprise company, and talk to them about their employment brand, and a lot of them have no idea what an employment brand is. They just think it's a good corporate brand, and it couldn't be further from reality. The second is building talent networks and really pooling and pipelining those roles as they, or those candidates, even when they're not necessarily interested. So, have that talent map ahead of you where you know candidate X is in that point of their career where they're going to be a viable candidate a year from now, and keeping them warm, giving those touches of here's a great press release that just went out about this client. Here's a video that their CEO just did. Sending those small touches once a month or something of that nature just to keep them engaged, or that works very well with the passive candidates. Similar. And then a missing piece that I think has happened is the We all want the perfect candidate that fits the job description, and
right,
there's been a lack of training or development. And I think a lot of managers, you know, we're put in a role and we're said, okay, well, from a sales aspect, we need to manage to a number. But the missing link is taking that person and developing them into the person, you know, you want them to be. So I think that's a key. And if I could say one thing that organizations, between the ones that are very successful in this talent market and the ones that aren't, is their ability to develop talent once it gets in the door.
Right. You know, that's a great point, John. And I think one that does not get mentioned often enough when we're talking about talent acquisition strategies and the companies that are more successful, as you said, it's maybe not just getting more effective at finding people, but it's what do you do with them once you've brought them in, right?
Absolutely.
Especially, yeah, with training and development, even onboarding, right? I mean, it's probably a separate discussion to have on the value and importance of effective onboarding in the context of talent acquisition strategy, right? I think you can two companies that start with, you know, the same, generally speaking, the same kind of talent, with the same background, the same skill set, same amount of experience, a company that onboards more effectively, more thoroughly, more thoughtfully is probably going to have a lot more success with the people they've brought in than a company that just kind of throws people to the wind once they enter the organization.
You couldn't have said it better. It is that first 30 days of somebody coming into an organization usually impacts the rest of their career. And
yeah.
That's key. And again, it goes back to creativity and making them feel engaged. One thing that we do and we really push to our clients is we've taken the video interviewing technology and used it as more of an onboarding tool. So when people people have the offer, they accepted it, is sending them five questions that they can do on a video and having that distributed to the team that they're going to be working on prior to their arrival. So people actually understand who they are, know about them.
Oh, I get it. So tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe kind of a thing, like, and
absolutely.
Shared with the team. Oh, that's a great idea. I've never heard anybody do that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and a lot of our clients that are doing it are having a ton of success, and it really makes the candidate feel engaged. So that first conversation when they walk in the door is not – you know, so where did you go to school? But it's already answered. Or some of the other
right.
pertinent information about them is there. So their team feels more of an attachment day one.
Right. I don't want to belabor this too long, but it's such a great point because I think what's like that awkward kind of first day or second day on the job most people have, and it's as you're being paraded around the office, right? Introduced to 100
yes.
people, and it's awkward kind of. But that application of technology is such a great way to try to help that process along. That's a great idea. Hey, John, the one last sort of question I had in general, and we can certainly talk about other things too, but just this came to mind when I was thinking of you know the conversation we'd have today in terms of the overall kind of trends in talent acquisition, which was the things we read and see about companies moving more to contingent or contract labor or temporary labor, whatever terminology you want to use, but certainly the diminished reliance on full-time hiring as compared to these more contingent arrangements. I would love for you to comment, A, are you really seeing that across, say, the clients and customers that you're serving? And then B, if so, what does that really mean for organizations and how they approach the talent market and how they have to think about talent acquisition perhaps a little differently?
Yeah, I think this is the one big myth that everybody keeps talking about, that everybody needs to switch to a more contingent labor force. But the fact is that we're in a very competitive talent market. And if you are a talented individual and you're presented with two offers, one being contingent and one being full-time, I highly doubt you're going to go into that contingent offer. And so I think if we were in the spot that we were as an economy 2 years ago or even 18 months ago, we would start seeing those trends. But so far we haven't seen it with our clients at all, but we sure read about it a lot.
You know what? That's a great point. Yeah, I read about it a lot too, and I'm with you on that, John. I know I just saw a survey recently that suggested that for college graduates, the new crop of college graduates, the incredibly strong preference for full-time employment above the other forms of employment that could be out there. I agree.
Yeah, and we've seen some of our clients coming to us and saying, okay, well, this is a major reason why we're going to come to you to outsource a piece of our recruitment function is because we want to make sure that the business impacting positions are being filled properly with the top talent, and we're going to focus on this contingent labor for the non-business impacting roles. And
right.
We just haven't seen it. So maybe others are, but I'm not.
Yeah, John, I appreciate those insights and those comments. I think it's a fascinating conversation in around that, sort of the companies maybe preferring that model for cost reasons, for risk mitigation reasons, and but people maybe not preferring it just from personal planning reasons and personal financial situation reasons or just their own career development. I think I probably need to do another podcast just about that issue in the next little while because it's a pretty interesting conversation. Let me do a quick reset, John. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. We're talking with John Wilson. John is the founder and CEO of Wilson HCG. Is a full-service RPO firm. And we're going to talk about RPO right now, John, a little bit, in a little bit more detail, if you don't mind. First of all, since I even alluded to this at the top of the show, you know, I'm, of course, familiar with RPO as a terminology, as a basic concept, but I feel like RPO can mean lots of different things, or maybe lots of different services are bundled up in that one name or that one acronym. Could you just tell me how you John, or you, Wilson HCG, define RPO, and then maybe, if there are any, share any of the common, maybe misperceptions that are common about what RPO is and what it isn't.
Sure. So for us, RPO is, first, that piece recruitment is number one, and that is why an organization, we want to look at an organization that's going to outsource a function of their recruitment process or the whole thing, is to have the improvement on talent, getting better people in the door. And I think what happened is when RPO became this acronym and this prevalent term in HR, it was when the economy started going down and you had some organizations that started doing RPO, and really what it was high volume, and I always like to say it was when everybody's talent, it was a company's talent acquisition department was a mess, and so they said, well, we'll give you our mess and you can do it for less.
It wasn't. Right.
There was no focus on talent. There wasn't any focus on making everything better. It was just a low-cost solution. And so now, as we see the market changing, for us, it's benefiting us because we focus on talent and driving every piece of that recruitment process to optimize it from your employment brand, how you're going to market, the technologies that you're using, hiring managers, making sure they're staying and not only compliance but being held accountable. And then, you know, probably the most important thing in all of that is what kind of business results that's driving.
Did we lose you?
Nope, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. Good. My apologies. No, okay, John, thanks for that. I apologize for the brief glitch. That might have been 20 seconds of a little hiccup there, but hey, John, let's talk about when does engaging in RPO make sense for an organization? Because it's probably right for some organizations or some industries, and maybe sometimes it's not right. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about when it really does make sense for an organization and perhaps when it might not.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it varies, and you'll see organizations that are, as I mentioned, a mid-sized enterprise company sitting in Silicon Valley that needs to get top talent and have a big recruitment function to support their business, even if they're not a Fortune 500 company.
Right.
And then you'll see organizations that are needing it because they need to remove the decentralized nature of recruitment. You see that with a lot of organizations that were built on acquisition or just purely have been built on different business units handling different things. But when an organization has needs as it relates to scale from going, you know, up and down as new products launches, the economic factors play in, needs to stay on top of technology, wants to understand the best practices of what's going on in the industry and what other organizations are doing, and truly has a focus on having top talent, if you meet those criteria, it is most likely a good idea to consider outsourcing a function of your recruitment or your entire talent acquisition process.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think so. I think that, to me, it's not dissimilar to other types of important services or functions an organization might need to engage with at different times in their life cycle, right? Sometimes it's infrastructure, sometimes it's facilities, sometimes it's talent, right? And often it's talent. And I think maybe this is what Jerry Crispin was alluding to later on when he talked about this as being a more important trend and a growing one as well, that organizations are beginning to realize that as talent acquisition, we talked about the creative and innovative approaches to talent acquisition and the technology is moving really quick as well, that it's got to be tough for companies to keep up with all this on their own, but yet they can engage a company like yours to whose business it is to keep up on these things and be aware of them and understand, you know, how to best engage talent and could be a very just makes a lot of sense, I think, in many instances as well, and I'm sure you're seeing that too.
Yeah, it's a big piece of it is the infrastructure. Building out the infrastructure, whether you're a huge company or a mid-sized company, having that infrastructure that's vetted all the technologies, has gone through it, and really is going to give you an upgrade from your current talent acquisition function because we're seeing the best practices of many organizations.
Yeah, I love that. I love that approach, and I want to talk a little bit about technology as well. There was one other question, John, I wanted to run by you in terms of just RPO in general. And we've been putting together the HR Technology Conference in the fall, and we've had some conversations with companies who are thinking about participating. And one in particular, I'm not going to say who the companies were; it doesn't really matter. But one of the challenges we heard from this particular company in an RPO relationship, not with your company, with a different one, was the importance of the relationship. And they had basically a bad experience because they felt like the companies were not aligned with things like cultural fit and kind of just approach. They just weren't, I don't know. Outsourcing your recruiting function is so much more important than, say, outsourcing, your data center. It doesn't really matter if the cultures don't align to your infrastructure provider, of hardware or something. But it really does, I think, for RPO. So I'd love for you to comment a little bit about those kind of challenges of what makes a good RPO relationship, I guess, is the short question that it took me 2 minutes to ask.
No, it's perfect. We hear that all the time as well from prospects that we're talking to. And for us, we try to do our sales process a little bit different to do all that due diligence up front, understanding. And where they go south is that if the provider isn't able to do that due diligence or the company isn't willing to provide it. So having that dual accountability right from the beginning to understand everything that's going on within an organization. And then as far as the cultural challenges, I think that usually goes back to being transparent and accountable from one or the other. So as we build out an RPO relationship with our clients, we assign the people who are going to be working on that account they have names and faces, and a lot of times we'll go on site. The people know who they are. We don't transfer them all around, or we say, hey, this is some big service center, and give us your rec. It goes on a big board, and somebody starts working on it who's ever available. It's dedicated
right. I'm thinking of like the deli
right.
counter. You take a number and grab the next one. Right, right.
Yeah, absolutely. So that cultural piece is huge, and for us, it's aligning the people with the organization and keeping that alignment throughout the relationship, and letting both of them grow together and closer is key for success.
Yeah, and I think that's got – I mean, right, I think that's – otherwise it becomes too much of you're spending more of your time kind of fighting about things that should have been worked out, right, and not really addressing the real important, acquisition questions or the strategic kind of issues, right? I mean, I guess that can happen in other forms of supplier and supplier and customer relationships as well. But I think in RPO, it's probably more important than in others. I guess is what I think. And I'm sure you guys do that too.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's very important to have that executive buy-in where you're working together from the top, where if it's me or the executive from another company, is we're having that conversation relatively frequently on what are the business strategies in your organization, what do you want to see from talent, and also understanding that the contract that you write in day one might, without fail, looks different than what it looks like at year two or year three. And being flexible and communicating is really what a partnership's about. And going by a specific contract, it's not outsourcing payroll here. It's talent. And that's important.
Right. And imagine, I think you alluded to this earlier, John. I think the scaling is important, too, because a company's the ability to scale up or down, you know, quickly, because I think, as you suggest, like a payroll outsourcing relationship, well, it's pretty much the same service year after year after year. And you know, I've had a lot of experience with payroll systems, too. It doesn't really matter how many people are on the payroll, if it's 1,000 or 2,000. It kind of all works the same way, right? Just the numbers got a little larger. But with talent acquisition, certainly, and talent requirements, those are going to scale up or down. They might, and sometimes fast, right? There could be a really quick jump or a slowdown. And I think companies who engage RPO have a much better opportunity to manage through those fluctuations probably than trying to do it all on your own. I mean, I've certainly been in situations where your company I worked with not too long ago, a couple of years back, you know, we were hiring like crazy and built this fairly big corporate recruiting team. And then all of a sudden, you know, strategies changed, business wasn't going so well, and the next thing we knew, we had, you know, a dozen in-house recruiters with not really that much to do. And it was bad for a lot of reasons. That was certainly one of the reasons that place had some challenges. So let me just do a quick reset. We're talking about RPO. Our guest is John Wilson, founder and CEO of Wilson HCG. My name is Steve Bose. We're recording the show on Thursday, May 16th, 2013. I do apologize for that brief hiccup about 10 minutes back, John. I'll try to edit that out if I can make that happen. Otherwise, we'll live with that. I'm not sure what happened there. But no worries. I wanted to talk. Yeah, I know. There's always something, right, with technology. And that's what wanted to talk about now. I wanted to talk a little bit about technology. You mentioned the video recruiting technology that you've employed to help facilitate onboarding, which I thought was just, again, one of the best ideas I've heard in a while. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more, if you don't mind, about technology and software. I mean, the talent acquisition technology market is the most innovative one, really, in all of HR technology, certainly, and probably maybe even in the whole of enterprise technology. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about, and I know you've hinted at these a little bit, maybe if you wanted to dive in a little bit more, to talk about some of the technological innovations and benefits that, not only that, you know, having an RPO provider can help benefit an organization, but just in general, what you're seeing, things that are happening in talent acquisition technology today.
Absolutely. I think a big advantage that an RPO provider is going to bring, or at least what we do, is all of those technologies that are out there, whether it's, you know, the video interviewing or career fairs, all the different things in sourcing talent, is vetting those out so our clients know what's good and what's not. I had an HR leader say to me not too long ago, so the best thing about having you guys here is that when my CEO comes to me and says, hey, I just read about this new technology for talent in the Wall Street Journal, why aren't we using it? And just sends an email and says, have we looked at this? And it's a quick response of, yes, this is why we're using this one over this one. And she's like, it just has made my life so much easier, because it's a constant battle that HR leaders face, just being asked why we don't use this. But you know, for us, it's what we see in the market right now is a lot of these technologies becoming refined and better, and you can actually use them. The old technology that was out there, a lot of the ATSs, the job boards, as I mentioned earlier, they're just gone. There's no functional real use for them anymore. And so now it's the technologies that we're seeing that we utilize are building talent networks, understanding data, being able to give forward-looking data rather than metrics that are all based in the past. So the another real advantage is, as you mentioned scale earlier, is that being able to take a something that is relatively low cost and implementing that throughout an organization that can really make an impact, and then you're cycling that back when it's not needed. Those are all really good things that I think organizations are starting to trend to. And as you said, the amount of new technology that we see in the human capital space changes on a weekly, if not daily, basis of what's being put in the market.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think the innovation always seems to be driven to great extent by where there's the most need, right? And since most organizations, whether they're hiring or not, actively increasing headcount overall, but there's certainly, there's always, you know, churn and in attrition. There are, you know, most organizations are looking to hire somebody, right? They're, I mean, maybe that's not fair to say, but many of them are, right? Many of them are in the market for talent, and so that constant need, right, it drives a lot of innovation. There's one specific technology we've seen a lot of. We've seen it at the HR Technology Conference, certainly, and at other events, is more innovative tools for sourcing, you know, tools that are designed to find and unearth people and build more dynamic profiles of them based on any kind of information that, that can be found across the web, whether it's, you know, public information or on a blog or a public LinkedIn profile, as well as information that might come from communities or forums, you know, the common application of these has been in the high-tech area and the development area where these new talent acquisition or talent sourcing tools are scraping sites like GitHub or Stack Overflow. I'd love, John, if you had any thoughts about sourcing and finding people and how technology is influencing just how people are identified or found.
Yeah, I think that us as recruiters and people in the talent space and are working with technology all the time have to be careful what we, how much we use it and are able to limit it at certain cases and using it as a tool rather than the end-all be-all. You know, the phone still works, all of those things to actually connect with a candidate. And it's really what helps us is bringing all those tools together into one. And some of these sourcing methodology, the difficulty is going to be, well, what happens to that data year two, year three, year four, and is that another talent network, and how do we utilize it? I think the scrubbing of the boards and get the scrubbing of all that information that's out there helps build a profile of somebody, but it's really what happens to that profile once it's built.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a challenge, right, for – the more data doesn't necessarily, I mean, it helps, but it also presents other problems as well, I think, right? That now I've got even more information. I've got to understand it, right? It doesn't necessarily help me directly understand, well, you know, things like fit and you know, interest, right? Things that the recruiters do, right?
Right.
Especially the interest part, right? I mean, someone's post online or on a forum or something doesn't tell you anything at all about their availability and interest for an opportunity, right? That's still a very personal, I think it is, and maybe you can disagree with me, but that still seems to me a very hands-on kind of interaction.
I agree, and when you have a competitive market, the high-touch relationship piece is extremely important. And with that is that we found in a lot of these tools, and some are very good, so we found that the integrity of the data sometimes is not what we would like. And so it's really using everything, again, as a tool rather than using it as a absolute.
Yeah. I think that's a great point, John. I think, you know, John, I think we want to, you know, just sort of wrapping up, putting a bow on the conversation, just maybe some thoughts around, you know, talent acquisition / RPO going forward yourself. I mentioned Jerry's show a couple of times where I asked him to prognosticate a little bit about the next year to 2 years, and I guess I'll ask you the same thing. You know, how do you see the talent acquisition, you know, landscape sort of playing out a little bit, if you could sort of take your crystal ball out and look out, and not too far in the future, because that's sort of a crazy exercise to predict that far ahead, but next year or two, what do you see as really driving talent acquisition and going to be really some interesting things to keep an eye out for in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think always it's going to be the inclusion of technology in the process. But as we've talked a lot about data, but having more predictive data, being able to see what's going to happen in the future with a client, being able to judge their risk, what does it look like in helping them workforce plan? I see talent acquisition shifting a lot towards that workforce planning, while the talent acquisition piece heavily focused on the employment brand, streamlining process with personal touch, making sure that the candidates are having a good experience. And we went into a bank and we were looking at their recruitment process, and you know, a candidate would apply and no one would ever hear from them. And you know, we said to them, they're all your customers. These are the people who are deciding whether to bank at your bank. And so the more organizations understand that, all of those things are going to, because it's so competitive right now that if you're not doing these things, you're going to be left out. So I see it just getting better and better. And really what should happen is the expectations of that C-suite inside companies, their expectations should increase of what they expect from talent acquisition.
Yeah, John, I think that's a great – I think they are. I think they are increasing, and I think they will continue to increase as well, right? It's, look, we've been talking about it for years and years, but – you know, beyond the lip service, companies really do realize talent is a differentiator in almost every industry today. And those who can find, attract, onboard, and effectively, you know, deploy that talent, they're the winners. That's clear. It's no doubt about it. So, John, where can people – first of all, thank you for taking the time for the conversation today. I really appreciate it. It's great to have a chance to connect and to talk today. I would where can people go to learn more about, you know, Wilson HCG, and what else maybe you want to draw some people's attention to?
Yeah, Steve, thanks again for having me on. It's been a lot of fun. You know, for us, obviously our website, wilsonhcg.com, and then we have a blog, thehumancapitalblog.com, and that's just real thought leadership and trying to address some of the things that are happening in the employment market from, as we talked about, contingent labor to diversity, technology, et cetera. If anything, connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to network, and anything more I can provide, I'd love to do. So thank
great,
you again.
John. No, my pleasure. Thank you. So that's John. We're John Wilson, from founder and CEO of Wilson HCG. You can check them out, wilsonhcg.com, as well as their blog. Find John from among the many John Wilsons on LinkedIn and on Twitter at Wilson CEO as well. So many, many thanks to John. And thanks to everyone for checking out the show today. This has been the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. We'll see you again. Our next show is coming up. I'm hoping to get it out in about a week's time. It's going to be around a topic we have not covered in 4 years of doing this show, which I'm sort of ashamed, but it's going to be around workplace bullying. And we've got an expert coming on to talk about that and to convince me that this is more of a problem than I realize. And I think it is, because I think I've been maybe one of the many people who haven't thought about this enough. So we'll be talking about workplace bullying in a couple weeks. Again, thanks to John Wilson. And that's it from the HR Happy Hour Show, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Steve.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.